Welcome to the next episode of MJA Podcasts. I'm Zane Colling, Editorial Assistant at the MJA. Today, Kate is joined by Dr. Leland Bandler, Senior Lecturer in Indigenous Health Education at the Centre for Values, Ethics and Law in Medicine and the Office of Medical Education at the University of Sydney's School of Medicine. Their conversation canvasses building the number of Indigenous doctors, the pressure to perform on Indigenous students, and how the role of Indigenous health workers is changing. They also discuss the focus of Indigenous health issues in helping close the gap, Dr. Bandler's relationship with Indigenous rights, her frustrations and relief, and the implications for Indigenous health in the 2014 budget.
Welcome. Thank you.
What is the state of play in terms of building the numbers of Indigenous doctors?
I think that we have goodwill, and I think that we have increased our numbers of students.
Yeah.
And I think that those numbers will continue to increase, and I think that there's a lot of work has gone into that.
Yep.
And now we need to make sure that they are able to graduate.
I was going to ask, because it seems to me the numbers of high school students going into medical school is on the rise, but they're just not coming out the other end as doctors. Is that a fair assessment?
I think we certainly haven't seen the increase in numbers of graduates as yet. That's partly because the numbers of medical students have relatively recently increased.
Yeah.
But I think it will come. I think it's just a matter of time now.
Are the medical schools around the country, are they getting on board in terms of the support and creating of safe environments that Indigenous students need?
Yes, they are. Absolutely, oh, yes. I think that every medical school has somebody working in its medical school that is really tuned to those needs. So the needs are across the spectrum. They're related to looking for students who are able to take on this course. They're related to encouraging those students and supporting them in the application process.
Mm-hmm.
They're related to then supporting them once they're admitted. There are some things that probably need to be addressed in that gap between school and medicine. So some pre-medical considerations. And certainly some universities are already doing that and have been doing it for some time. University of New South Wales brings to mind.
Yep.
And then there are issues once students are admitted of providing support for the duration of their course. And that support, I think, falls into two parts. I think there are issues around academic support.
Yep.
And there are issues around personal support. And personal support includes financial support, so scholarships, mm-hmm. Related to in-kind, so computers, etc., the costs. Because the reality of a medical course is that, in general, people cannot work sufficiently to support themselves through that course. It's not like doing an arts degree, when you can often just manoeuvre your tutorials and your lectures into a small enough space in the week that allows you to make a reasonable income in the rest of the week.
Yeah.
Medicine's really not like that.
It's
very
full. 5 or 6 days a week, isn't it?
It is, absolutely. Yeah. And we have attendance requirements, for example, at Sydney Medical School, so it isn't as though you can put some of that aside. There are a lot of just face-to-face things that are required.
Are Indigenous students under more pressure to perform than non-Indigenous?
I think so, but I think that that pressure comes from a whole range of places and people.
Yeah.
So I think that inevitably we, perhaps inadvertently, but inevitably place some pressure on them as a medical school, giving them particular pathways into medicine. So I think that places some pressure on them. I think they also feel some pressure from their families and communities. Mm. I think they also feel some pressure from the university that is keen to take them. They feel pressure from their scholarship providers or their financial support providers.
Mm-hmm.
But I think most of the pressure actually comes from within.
Yep.
And I think that they have my experience is that they have a tremendous sense of responsibility to their own communities, but more broadly in terms of Indigenous health and their commitment and their ability to make a difference. So they feel that really strongly. Now, would that all of our medical students had a sense of responsibility to community and responsibility to people who actually have helped them get to that point. So it's not that I would wish that that Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander students didn't have that sense of pressure, but we need to be cognizant of the fact that it is there and it needs sometimes to be addressed. So, for example, when they're called upon as Aboriginal medical students to perform particular duties, whether it's speaking at a forum or being mentors for others or speaking to high school students or any of those sort of duties, I think we need to be cognizant of the fact that they also have to get through medicine and that medicine is a difficult and time-consuming course. And so we are, in a way, tearing them between their commitments, their commitment to get through medicine, but they're also their recognition of their commitment to be a role model, to be someone that speaks on behalf of Indigenous health or speaks on behalf of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander medical students. It comes with an added burden. It does.
Like being a captain of a cricket team, I suppose. You know?
Yes.
Apart from being a good batsman, you've also got to do all the press stuff.
Yes, you've got to do all of that. And I think there have been occasions, certainly when I've said to some of our cohort, you really need to step back from that. You have one really important job at the moment, and that is to get through medicine. And then your ability, in fact, to take on all of those other roles is enhanced.
Yeah.
And without that background of the need to commit time and effort and energy into studying medicine.
This issue that this podcast is coinciding with is our Indigenous health issue. And in our careers section, we've got a feature about Indigenous health workers. And the feeling that as the number of doctors increases, Indigenous doctors increases, that perhaps the role of Aboriginal health workers is changing and may actually become more irrelevant. Do you have a feeling on that role?
I think that fails to recognise the diversity of places that Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander medical students will end up in.
Yeah.
There is obviously a tension about that for both the communities and families that have supported Indigenous students, but also for the students themselves and then the graduates. But realistically, a lot of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander students and then graduates will not return to work necessarily in Indigenous health, or may only work in Indigenous health for some portion of their time.
Yep.
Others of them are very interested in working in Indigenous health and may well take up a career in that, but it has to be recognised that a significant number won't. And in fact, in a way, we, by expecting that they will solve, in inverted commas, Indigenous health, we do them a disservice.
Yeah.
And there is a sense that we abrogate everybody else's responsibility to address those disparities. But I do think that the answer is no. I don't think that having more Aboriginal medical graduates will actually take away the role of Aboriginal health workers, because I think that they have very different roles.
Yeah.
I'm sure that for an Aboriginal person walking in and seeing an Aboriginal doctor, that is a different experience. I don't have any doubt about that. Having said that, though, I think that the role of Aboriginal health workers in the day-to-day nitty-gritty of good healthcare provision for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islanders is so crucial and so pivotal that it will be a long time before we should say, no, that's not something we need. In fact, if anything, I would be keen for us to provide them, who, and I think they have one of the most difficult roles in healthcare provision, I think that really you would hope that we would get better at supporting them. both professionally and personally.
Yeah. The theme of our podcast this year is looking forward. What are the big issues for Indigenous health education, and where does the focus need to be in terms of closing the gap, making it better?
Well, my personal view is that we actually have a framework through the Australian Medical Council standards for Indigenous health education mm-hmm. within all medical schools. And it would seem to me that if we ensured that that was delivered well in every medical school in Australia, then we could make a difference. And the reason I say that is that part of what is expected is that we will teach every medical graduate to have some knowledge about Aboriginal health, both here and Indigenous health more internationally, and understand the reasons and the history behind the health disparities. But we'll also see that they have a role to play, albeit a small or large role,
mm-hmm.
and that they are part of how it will get solved, albeit bit by bit. And that if we were able to graduate every medical student with that understanding and a sense of engagement, a sense of responsibility, a sense of willingness to be an advocate, then I think we would do well, and we would start to add another component into solving the health disparities that Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islanders experience.
Do you feel that there's a generational change coming?
I think there always is.
Yeah,
I'm old enough to think that generational change happens all the time, and thank God it does.
Yes.
If it was all left up to old fogies, really, you should walk away now.
You've been at the heart of Indigenous rights activism all your life. Your mother is Faith Bandler.
Yes.
And, you know, she was at the forefront of the 1967 constitutional changes. Are you frustrated by how far we still have to go 50 years on? Or are you amazed how far we've come?
Well, I guess both, really. I suppose that along with that sort of political activism, I was also with my parents involved in activism around things like peace and world peace mm-hmm. and such high aspirations. And similarly, you could be despondent about how little progress we've made and how far we have to go. But that's, as my mother would say, that's why you get up in the morning, to do more work towards those things. And and whatever point we were in, there will always be more to do, and you keep going. I'm not sure that it's, of course I would like that things were better, of course, but they're not, so you keep going.
How is your mother?
My mother is 95. She lives with us now.
Excellent.
And it is excellent. And I guess it is interesting having your parent come to live with you. And I wouldn't want to say it was anything less than challenging. But just because it changes the dynamic of who are the adults in this house and who actually is in charge. And I think it also makes me reflect in a way that I wasn't able to as a young adult. I think when you're a young adult, you're so busy making your own life and your own sense of person that you don't really reflect on what your parents are like. So it's a nice opportunity to do that.
Excellent. The budget. It's hard to go past the budget at the moment.
It is indeed. It's everywhere.
It is. Do you think all the details of the implications for Indigenous health, for example, have come to light yet?
No, not by a long way. And look, I'm no expert in this by any means, but I think that how this will work out has not been revealed fully yet. And I think how what will be the final look of the impact on Indigenous health is not clear. And I think that there's a lot of work to be done both by advocacy groups but also by parliamentarians to really recognise the impact of some of the decisions that were apparent in the budget. So I think, for example, and I know this, I'm sitting in the offices of the Medical Journal of Australia, I recognise that, but I think, for example, the issues around the $7 co-payment have really particular meaning for Aboriginal medical services. And I think how that will be played out and how we will decide those things is complex. I think issues around fees and debts that students graduate with have also not been really thought through carefully in terms of Indigenous medical graduates, let alone anybody else. So I think there's a lot of work and a lot of review and revision yet to come.
And the irony is that probably Aboriginal-controlled community health centres are, as you said earlier, a pretty good model that the rest of the country could
actually think about. I agree. And I think that if there are budgetary measures that start to significantly impact on Aboriginal medical services, I think that will be a major step backwards. Yeah. I think that many medical services now are really starting to have a really, I mean, they have been for some decades, but they're going through another iteration, as it were, now. And I think there are some really exciting things happening across many medical services. And if that is impaired by some of the budget decisions, I think that would be tragic.
Yeah. Thank you so much for your time.
My pleasure.
It's been a pleasure.
And thank you for making it painless. Yes, appreciated.
That was Dr. Lilyn Bandler, Indigenous Health Education Expert from the University of Sydney. Join us next time with Professor Richard Smith, former editor of the BMJ, who will be in Sydney for the MJA Centenary Celebrations on the 4th of July.